Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Dead or Alive Trilogy, Book 3, Blood Money by Ralph Cotton. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Michael Glenn, Alyssa Wilman, Michael John Casey, Tim Getman, Patrick Bussink, Richard Rowan, Christopher Sheeran, Thomas Keegan, Stephen Carpenter, James Konacek, Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, Gary Tells, Danny Gavigan, James Lewis, Johan Detweiler, Joe Brack, Dylan Lynch, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Thomas Penny, Drew Copus, Alexander Strain, Yasmin Toison, Nanette Savard, and Gregory Gorton.
On the streets of Cleveland, Ohio, all heads turned in sheer wonder at the sight of the two tall, battered Stetson hats. The hats bobbed along above the upturned collars of two long yellow rain slickers in the early morning mist. The onlookers stared as the two lawmen made their way across the street toward Landau's boarding house. The lawman on the right was Two Jack Roth, a Cherokee, and the good folks of Cleveland were not accustomed to seeing Indians except in still life form, carved in wood, holding a handful of cigars. But Two Jack Roth was used to being stared at any time he strayed very far east of Fort Smith, Arkansas. The two lawmen stepped up onto the curb out front of the Landau Hostel and stopped. Two Jack Roth turned to his partner, Sullivan Hart.
Front or rear?
Front.
Sullivan Hart might as well have been a cowboy straight off the cover of Harper's Weekly. The people of Cleveland stared at him, too. As Hart pulled his Colt, Two Jack Roth swung the shotgun free from beneath his rain slicker and moved around the side of the boarding house.
Somebody get the police!
Yes, ma'am, you do that! Tell them two deputy U.S. federal marshals from Judge Charles Isaac Parker's court are here to make an arrest. Now everybody stay back. Thank you.
Hart reached out, turned the doorknob, and slipped inside the foyer of the Landau. Raymond and Creed Doyle were in the Landau. They were wanted in Fort Smith for murder, rape, assault, jailbreak, blowing up a water tank, and many other assorted charges Hart hadn't bothered to read. The murder and rape charges were enough for Sullivan Hart. He and Roth had watched the boarding house for the past hour from their position in an alley across the street, back behind an open produce stand. They'd seen the Doyle brothers enter the front door of the Landau only moments ago, one of them wearing a striped cloth railroader's cap, the other carrying a small wooden crate under his arm. Hart closed the door softly behind him and crept along a wood-paneled wall to the winding stairwell. He moved up the stairs. At the top of the landing, he stopped and looked down the length of the hall. He saw Roth step into the hall through a small door at the far end. The two of them converged on the third door down the hall, the door to the room where they had spotted a glimpse from the street of Cree Doyle's cloth railroader's cap through the window. Then Hart raised his boot for a hard kick. The two lawmen sprang inside. They fanned their guns back and forth on the empty room, then immediately got the picture. Roth turned quickly back to the hall, Sullivan Hart to the open window. As Roth stuck his head out into the hall, he saw the double barrel come out of the door of the adjoining room. Roth moved quickly, knowing the double barrel had spent itself. He took aim on Cree Doyle's back as Cree rounded the staircase. Roth's second shot took him in the shoulder. Hart sprang out onto the ledge and, looking up, saw Raymond Doyle's leg as Raymond rolled over onto the tin roof. Hart saw the shotgun barrel reach down over the edge of the roof.
You sons of bitches!
Hart dove through the open window. Hart headed out of the room, searching for a way up to the roof. He caught a glimpse of Roth's yellow rain slicker as Roth disappeared down the stairs. Hart raced to the small rear door at the other end of the hallway. In the large kitchen below, Cree came spilling into the room.
Damn you, engine!
Roth barged into the room after him. Roth's shot drew a long spray of blood from Cree's leg. Another shot sliced off the lobe of Cree's left ear. Roth advanced on him, and Cree swung the empty shotgun like a club. Roth ducked and grabbed Cree by the throat. On the roof, Sullivan Hart crept toward a tall stone chimney. A smear of blood marked a path, and Hart looked down at it for only a second, then backed up at the curl of steaming breath and the tip of the shotgun visible at the chimney's edge.
My God, Raymond, you're bleeding something awful.
I know it, damn you! Stay back, you lousy law dog! You ain't taking me back, Hart, not alive!
Well, yes I am, Raymond. You're going back to Fort Smith. The alive part is entirely up to you. How bad are you hit?
Oh, I'm hit bad. I blew my damn toes off firing down at you.
Oh, Jesus, Raymond. You better do something quick. You could bleed out up here.
I told you I ain't going back. Now let's get on with it. I can stand you back all day if I have to.
Is that the way you want to go out, Raymond? In a strange town, everybody back home hearing about it later, knowing you blew your own foot off?
It's not my foot, damn it, it's just my toes.
Ugh. Yeah, but by the time the story gets told and retold, you know how it goes.
Why'd you have to show up here, Hart? Me and Cree was doing good. Got night jobs at the rail yard. We was going straight as ducks. Now look at us.
You were going straight, Raymond. I saw that crate you brought in a while ago. What's in it? Explosives, I bet. You two were up to something, weren't you?
Well, we never said railroading was a career. We was doing it to hold ourselves over. We might have blown up an express car later on just to get us some traveling money.
See? That's why we had to come after you boys. You both no good, and you know it. Now give up and let's go home, huh? You run out of string.
He'll hang us. Parker will. You know it.
Can you blame him, Raymond? Are you surprised? Haven't you always figured you'd hang one day, the way you two have carried on? Parker will only be doing what you knew was going to be done sooner or later. Be a man about it. Pitch that scattergun out and let's wrap this up. It'll be getting hot up here before long.
Nope. But you sure tell my ma how much I love her. Will you do that for me, Hart? She did the best she could with Cree and me. Will you tell her that her boys are both gone on to heaven?
Wait! Cree's not dead. He gave himself up to Roth. I saw Roth leading him out.
Well, he can tell Ma for me then. Either way, she's gonna miss me, that poor precious woman. God love her. She'd have done anything not to have this happen.
Raymond, I hate to tell you this, but it was your Ma who told us where you boys were hiding.
No, it weren't, Hart. I know better than that.
Sorry, Raymond, but it's the truth. 3 weeks back, you mailed her a letter. Sent $7 in it. How would I know that if she hadn't told us?
I'll be damned. That scabby old bitch jackpotted us. After me sending her money? Paul should have choked her to death years ago.
Too bad, Raymond. Should have sent more than $7, I reckon.
Well, to hell with her. You sure Cree's still alive, Hart?
I'd bet on it, Raymond.
Raymond's hand reached out and dropped the shotgun to the tin roof.
There, it's done, Hart. Come help me out here.
In a minute, Raymond. First, throw out your pistol.
What pistol?
Come on, Raymond.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
A pistol arced out and dropped on the roof a few inches in front of Hart. He scraped it up and shoved it down into his waistband.
Step out backwards to me, Raymond. Keep both hands good and high. What's in the box, Raymond? Dynamite?
Yep, real powerful government stuff.
Government stuff? Where'd you get it?
Off a fellow by the name of Burdeen over in Indian Territory. He never said where he got it. Not that I asked.
You're lucky we caught you. You'd have blown your full head off.
On the street, Two Jack Roth stepped down off the curbing, carrying Creed Doyle under his arm. A police wagon careened to a halt, three uniformed officers jumping down from its running boards. Roth dropped Creed to his feet and steadied him in place with one hand.
Easy, officers. We're lawmen.
The officers stopped short 3 feet back, none of them seeming to know what the hell to do. They looked at one another, then turned for advice to a tall police captain as he stepped down beside the wagon driver. Just then, Sullivan Hart came walking around the side of the boarding house. Raymond Doyle's arm looped across his shoulder. Raymond limped along, leaving a dark smear of blood with each step.
I have a warrant for these men's arrest, Captain.
Hart handed a folded document to the captain.
We're U.S. Federal Marshals, here to take them back to stand trial for murder.
Take them back? Back where?
To Judge Parker's court in Fort Smith, Captain...
Oh, I'm Dawsey. Captain Leonard Dawsey. Did you say Judge Parker's court? The hanging judge?
As he spoke, Dawsey took the offered document from Hart's hand, opened it, and read it silently.
Yep, hanging judge.
Hart leaned Raymond Doyle against the side of the police wagon, took out a pair of handcuffs, and cuffed Raymond's hands behind his back.
Don't forget about my foot!
I won't, Raymond. We'll get you some medical treatment here in a minute.
Hart turned back to the captain.
As you can see, Captain, everything's in order. I'd like to get this man treated. That one, too.
Hart nodded toward the long string of blood hanging from Cree's clipped earlobe.
It's been a rough morning. If you'll have your men go inside, they'll find a crate of explosives. Dynamite. They best be careful handling it.
Dynamite?
I'm bleeding worse.
Come on, Raymond. We'll get you to the hospital. What do you say, Captain? Can we get these boys patched up? There's a train headed west this afternoon. I need to be on it. Gotta be back in Fort Smith for a hanging. The man killed my father and cut his ears off. I gotta be there.
He cut his ears off?
Yep. You can see why I wouldn't want to miss seeing him hang, I'm sure.
Yeah.
At Fort Smith in Arkansas, Judge Charles Isaac Parker looked up from the document he held between his hands. Daniel Slater, his deputy, sat across the desk from him.
Any word yet from that new man? His name escapes me.
Jake Coke, Your Honor. No, we've not heard a word since he left 2 weeks ago. Is something wrong, Your Honor? Bad news?
No.
Judge Parker folded the document absently and put it inside his coat.
Let me know the minute Coke gets back, Deputy. When you see him, tell him to sit tight until I send for him. Refresh my memory, Daniel. Coke's the one with that cut-down contraption of a rifle, isn't he? Used to be a bounty hunter, among other things.
That's right, sir. He made a good name for himself in a short time bounty hunting, till he got stabbed in the back over in Dodge.
Yes, yes, I recall his reputation now.
Something is wrong, isn't there, Your Honor?
No, nothing's wrong. I'm short-handed here. There are only 4 deputies in town, and have enough arrest warrants to reach from here to Texas, end to end. How's he working out, this bounty hunter, Coke?
So far, just fine, Your Honor. You had me send him out after Delbert Strom. Coke has taken down some pretty tough hombres, I understand.
Oh, Then what exactly is taking him so long on Delbert?
Maybe the weather, Your Honor?
The weather, indeed.
Deputy U.S. Marshal Jake Coke lay atop the mud-slick ridge, keeping a close eye on the cabin 80 feet below him. Beside Coke, his black dog, Buster, lay huddled in the pouring rain. Coke looked at the dog, then back behind himself to see where he'd tied his big dapple gray. The horse stood with its head lowered, long streams of water running down its silvery mane. Coke looked back down at the cabin. Three horses stood bunched together at the hitch rail, soaked and worn. Coke had seen no movement through the window of the cabin for the past hour. Jake Coke knew what to expect, tracking men like Delbert Strom. The idea was to never be in a big hurry, especially in weather like this. He'd only been working for Judge Charles Isaac Parker for 2 months, but he'd learned a lot in the past year and a half bounty hunting on his own. Before that, Jake had served in the Army, taught school, hauled freight across Kansas, driven cattle, clerked in a bank, worked for a dentist making false teeth, raised chickens for the Navy, and worked as a cooper in a barrel factory in Pennsylvania. All this before he'd even turned 23. As he watched the cabin through the heavy rain, Coke tried to work out clearly in his mind how much he would make for taking in Delbert Strom. Delbert was the only man of the three with an outstanding warrant on him. The other two just happened to be riding with Delbert Strom when Coke picked up Delbert's trail. No matter what kind of problem those other two men caused him, Coke wouldn't make a cent for his trouble. And somehow that just didn't seem fair. For arresting Delbert Strom, Coke would make the standard $2 arrest fee plus mileage, which was figured at 6 cents per mile. It seemed only fair to Coke that should a marshal have to shoot two or three of the wanted felon's friends while attempting to make an arrest, there ought to be some sort of compensation for it, say, $1 per head. A lot of things hadn't been made clear to him when he took this job. He wished he'd written a few things down.
Fat lot of good that would have done me. Let's see.
He used his gloved fingertips to take a quick tally. He traveled 80 miles at 6 cents a mile, and that came to
$4.80. Wait, all right, $4.80 plus $2 for the rest, $6.80. Well, that couldn't be right. Oh.
The part he really couldn't understand about the pay was that if he had to kill a man to bring him to justice, he didn't make a thing, only the mileage. Now that made no sense at all to him. Of course, if that felon should happen to have an outstanding reward still issued somewhere, dead or alive, Judge Parker's court would see to it the arresting officer received that. Coke wished he'd given all of this a little more thought before taking the job. The fact was, he'd been desperate for work, what with the doctor's bills and expenses the knifing in Dodge City had cost him. But in the past 2 months, marshaling for Parker, only having met the judge once for about 5 minutes the day he was sworn in, Coke had only earned a little over $100. At this rate, he figured he'd have to gather in every wanted man between Fort Smith and El Paso just to keep body and soul together. He ran a hand along the short barrel of his sawed-off rifle, wiping water from it.
Nope, not nearly enough pay.
The cabin door suddenly swung open, and the three men walked out to their horses. Coke immediately slid back from the edge of the cliff. Soon as Coke saw that they were headed upward in his direction, he hurried back in a crouch to the dapple gray, unhitched it, and swung up.
Yeah, let's go, Cyrus. See if we can turn a profit on this deal before we drown.
In moments, Coke had taken position and sat waiting for him. At the high turn in the south trail, where the land flattened above a rise of boulders, Delbert Strom, Lawrence Martin, and Kenny Demms drew up sharply at the sight of the single rider sitting mid-trail atop the big dapple gray.
Dilbert Strom! I have a warrant for your arrest for armed robbery and the assault of an Indian on a government reservation. Raise your hands and do not move.
Assault on an Indian? If you mean that damn Modoc, he like to took my damn ear off with a paring knife. Read me that damn warrant. What's it say?
What's the difference what it says? You're under arrest.
But I was only defending myself. That robbery was all a misunderstanding, you might call it.
The three men looked Jake Coke up and down in hasty appraisal. Coke was not an imposing figure, nor did his bearing summon up any immediate caution or respect. He was broad-shouldered, but with a constant stoop. Out of habit, he always sat a bit low in his saddle, as he did now, his sawed-off rifle across his lap. Coke had an affliction in his left eye that made it seem to gaze off-center. Not much, just enough to give his wide face a flat expression. While his vision was by no means impaired, there was something about his staggered gaze that caused some people not to take him seriously right away. A serious mistake on their part, because Jake Coke was, in spite of his appearance, a very deadly young man.
You'll have to tell it to the judge, Delbert Strom! I'm taking you in! You two men step your horses aside and do not interfere. I'm a U.S. Deputy Marshal carrying out my official...
Lawrence Martin had fired the first shot.
Go to hell, law dog!
Jake Coke jerked the sawed-off rifle up from his lap. He nailed Lawrence Martin in the chest. Kenny Kearns tried to aim his Colt. Kearns twisted sidelong out of his saddle and fell to the ground, his pistol going off and grazing Delbert Strom's leg. Delbert's hand went for the holstered pistol on his hip.
Don't do it, Strom! I want you alive!
But Delbert was too far into his move to stop it. His hand came up cocking the pistol. Coke got Strom in the chest.
Oh, damn it, Strom! I told you not to do it.
He bent down beside Delbert Strom and cradled the man into his arms.
All right, come on, how bad is it? Talk to me, Delbert. Do you hear me?
I'm done for.
No, you're not, Delbert. Don't talk like that. You're gonna be all right. Damn. Why'd you have to make a move for that pistol? I didn't want to shoot you.
Judge Parker's court?
Yeah, that's right. Now keep still. You're gonna make it.
You won't get paid if I'm dead, will you?
You'll live.
I heard of you. You're a damn bounty hunter.
No, I used to be. I'm riding for Parker now. Lay still. I'll get you some water.
No time. Listen to me. I'm one of them.
One of them? Them what?
Los Pistoleros. I'm one. Tell Sims it ain't over yet.
That's good. Now just take it easy. Delbert,
no, it's true. He thinks it's over. It ain't over.
Strom's eyes stared at nothing.
There goes my $2.
He wondered what the man was talking about. He'd heard of what had happened a few months back, how a gang called Los Pistoleros had been riding rampant across the Southwest, how one of the leaders had killed Marshal Coleman Hart and cut his ears off. But that gang had been busted up for good by old Coleman Hart's son, Sullivan, and his partner, 2 Jack Raw. The gang leader, J.T. Tuck Priest, was now in Parker's jail awaiting hanging. So what was Delbert Strom talking about?
Tell Sims it ain't over.
Jake Coke considered it while looking at the other two bodies. Then he walked over to Kenny Kearns and kicked the pistol away from Kearns' hand, just in case. Before leaving Fort Smith, Coke had seen Deputy Marshal Charlie Sims outside the judge's office. Then again, later that night at the Red Bull Saloon. The way Coke had heard it, Quick Charlie Sims had played a big part in taking down the leader of Los Pistoleros. Delbert Strom had probably only been making mindless death rattles. But still, Coke figured he'd better mention it to Sims all the same. Buster moved in close and sniffed one of the dead men's faces.
Oh, get back, Buster.
Coke nudged the dog away with the side of his boot. He dreaded hauling three bodies all the way back to Fort Smith through the rain just to see if there was any reward money floating around on them.
No, sir. This job didn't pay nearly enough. Not for this kind of work.
The rain hampered Jake Coke and his three-horse string of dead bodies for the next 2 days. On the third day, once the rain ceased, the land grew sweltering and steamy until by nightfall the sun had baked any remains of moisture from the air. The next day by noon, the ground beneath the dappled gray's hooves had turned deeply cracked and hard as iron. To make matters worse, coming down a shallow cut bank, dappled gray threw a shoe. Coke had to walk 7 miles before leading his grisly procession into an army encampment, still a full day's ride from Fort Smith. With his bandana masking his face to keep out the dust and the smell of death, Coke met two guards at the perimeter of the encampment. He followed them in as Buster traipsed off on his own in search of a jackrabbit or whatever other creatures might be sifted out of the brushy flatlands. In the hottest part of the day, an Irish corporal stoked up his smithing and hearth and soon hammered out a new shoe for the horse, while Jake Coke sat in the shadow of an open front personnel tent and sipped water from a tin cup. A young captain by the name of Vertree sat across from him on a folding army chair and asked him about the sour-smelling bodies on the three horses Coke had tied to a thin cottonwood tree.
The one I was after is a no-account by the name of Delbert Strom. The other two decided to take a stand with him.
And good riddance to them. Our job out here would be twice as easy if we could get rid of the outlaw element.
I'll do the best I can. I was lucky to find you still here, Captain. Saw your encampment here the last time I rode through, but I figured you'd be pulled out by now.
We did pull out, Marshal. I was all set to go on leave, then that blasted Apache Victorio crossed back over the border. This time he's come farther east than anybody expected. He usually stays along the Texas border. Mexican federales must have pressed him hard lately. He's down to a dozen warriors, but still kicking mean, traveling with no women or children. You're fortunate not to run into him.
Yeah, I reckon I was. I saw no sign of Apache. Wouldn't have anyway with the rain.
I doubt there's any chance of you running into him now this close to Fort Smith, but watch your step out there all the same.
I always watch my step out there. Thanks for the warning, though. I can't figure old Vic coming this far in. Must be his last stand.
I wouldn't count on that. He's got more twists and turns than a rattlesnake.
As the corporal shooed the dappled gray, two men eased in beneath the tarpaulin overhang. One of them ran his palm along the dapple's rump, and the other looked across the 20 yards distance to where Vertrees and Coke sat sipping water.
Yeah, Henry, that's that son of a bitch, all right.
I'd recognize that sawed-off rifle from a mile away.
The corporal returned from his dipping trough.
What are you two buzzards doing in here, Davis? This is for military personnel only.
Take it easy, Corporal. Me and my partner Henry like to keep an eye on whoever's coming and going. You never know what you run into out here.
Yeah? And for my money, the captain should never let you two border rats into camp. Now get out of here, or I'll wear you out with this stove iron.
All right, damn it. Now there's no need for you to get huffy about it. Let's go, Henry.
Outside the shade of the canvas overhang, Davis Nally grabbed Henry's arm and pulled him behind the cover of an empty supply wagon.
Come here.
He nodded toward Jake Coke and Captain Vertrees.
The bounty hunter don't know it yet, but he's about to pay me an overdue bill for my Uncle Cletus.
He's the one you told me about? The one what killed your uncle? He don't look like much to me.
Oh, but yes, indeed he is. He's all sand and gristle, but not for much longer. We're going out on the flats to pick up his trail when he finishes up here. Tonight, we'll just pay Mr. Jake Coke a little visit.
How do you know he'll be alone?
Do you see anybody with him? Damn it, Henry, he always travels alone. Used to keep a black cur guarding his flanks at all time. I reckon that cur went and got itself killed along the line. We're in luck, Henry. Just pay attention. Follow my lead. Pretty soon we'll be the men that killed Jake Coke. I'll have his famous sawed-off rifle to prove it.
Davis and Nally slipped back along the wagon toward their horses. Henry Fletcher followed in a low crouch. When the dapple gray was ready and Jake Coke stepped beneath the canvas overhang, pulling on his trail gloves, the corporal rolled down his sleeves.
If you're riding toward the North Fork, watch your back. There's a couple of no-good derelicts named Nally and Fletcher headed out that way a half hour ago. They were eyeing you before you left.
Much obliged, Corporal. I saw them. Didn't recognize either of them, though. Can I pay you something for the shoe?
Nah, compliments of the U.S. Army. But you can do us all a favor and shoot those two buzzards if they cross your trail. We know they're running whiskey, stealing horses and whatnot. We just haven't caught them at it yet.
We'll see how it goes. I'm not about to have them trailing me all the way home.
That evening, having seen no sign of Buster, Coke made his camp on the East River bank, purposefully choosing a strand of willows that afforded thin cover on one side, yet thickened into an impenetrable tangle of whips and branches on the other. No one could slip through and be upon him from the rear without being heard. He hitched the three-horse string of bodies a few yards away and kept the dapple gray closer to himself, away from the terrible stench. At dark, with a low fire licking at the bottom of his small coffee pot, Jake Coke intentionally took the sawed-off rifle from its holster. He laid it a full arm's reach from himself in clear view. Coke pretended not to hear the footsteps move closer, until at last one of the men deliberately crushed a twig beneath his boot to get his attention. Jake made the gesture of reaching toward the rifle, but then stopped.
That wouldn't be a good idea, Pilgrim. Reach for that rifle, I'll cut your arm off of the elbow.
Who are you? What do you want?
Davis Nally stood a foot closer than his partner, Henry, a long Colt hanging loosely in his hand, the barrel only slightly tipped in Coke's direction.
I'll ask the questions here. Henry? It looks like we caught the famous bounty hunter with his mind on other matters.
You must have me confused with someone else. I'm no bounty hunter. I'm a federal marshal with Judge Parker's court. If you men know what's good for you, you'll turn around
and... Shut your mouth. I know who you are. You're Jake Coke, a bounty-hunting, blood-money-sucking bastard.
Jake Coke, me? Well, I've heard of Coke, but...
Oh, yeah, you're him all right. Don't deny just because we got the drop on you. I recognize the rifle. You always carry it. You carried it when you killed my uncle Cletus over near Sulphur. You rode a big dapple gray and you traveled with a black hound, had brindle legs and a patch of white down its chest. The flea bag nearly chewed my kneecap off the day you gunned my poor uncle down.
All right, I'm Coke. But I don't remember you, mister.
Yeah, well, of course you don't. The damn cur got me before I reached town. He sprang out of nowhere and took me plumb out of my saddle.
He was quite a dog, sure enough. I hated losing him.
Oh? Well, without him, I reckon you ain't all you was made up to be. Where is he?
He's dead. Injuns got him last fall up near Wind River.
Good. I hope they ate that cur for breakfast. Now, you and me get to settle something betwixt us. For once and for all.
Go on and shoot him, Davis. Quit talking. This place is giving me the jitters.
Hush up, Henry. What the hell's your hurry? It ain't every day a man gets the drop on Jake Coke. I want to watch him sweat before he dies.
I don't sweat easily. Now listen good, Davis. You too, Henry. I've been seeing you Peckerwood stir dust ever since I got back on the river trail. I'm on my job and I got no time for you idiots fanning me. Leave your horses where they stand and back away. I'll turn them loose come morning. It's the best deal you'll get here. I killed your uncle for his reward money, but I'll kill you for free in about 5 seconds.
He's making a bluff, Henry. Can you see it? He knows we got him. We caught him out here alone, no witnesses, and his rifle out of reach.
Well, I don't know, Davis.
Alone? Oh, I lied about the dog.
Buster, tell these boys hello.
Damn it!
Nally's pistol came up, but it was too late. From inside Colt's leather vest, a short-barreled, double-action Colt Thunder had appeared as if from out of thin air. Davis went down. Henry Fletcher's pistol never even made it waist high. A streak of black shot forward from the shadows like a dark apparition.
Stupid Peckerwoods. They always watch the rifle.
Good boy, Buster.
Coke studied the face of Davis Nally for a second.
Oh, yeah, I remember him now. Bobita, Texas. Cattle rustler. $100 reward. Huh. Might even be worth a dollar or two. Buster, we might have just made some money out here after all.
At the courthouse, Jake Coke signed over custody of the 5 bodies to Deputy Daniel Slater, who in turn would submit him to the undertaker for a good face washing and photo plates. Once the photo plates were developed, Slater would compare their dead faces one at a time to wanted posters in a wooden file cabinet. Slater had a keen eye for matching faces to wanted posters. Any rewards Slater found on the dead men would be shared equally between himself and Coke. Another part of the pay setup that didn't seem quite right to Coke. But what could he say? At least the reward on Davis Nally would be Coke's alone, him having already known about it and not needing Slater to look it up.
The judge said for me to let him know the minute you got back here.
Oh, what's he want?
Well, banged if I know. But you stay close by. Maybe he'll be sending you back out, give you a chance to make some money.
Well, I could use it. I'll be staying at the Sunnyside if you need to find me.
Coke stabled the dapple gray at the livery barn most frequented by Parker's lawmen and took a room at the Sunnyside, a lodging house only 2 squares from the courthouse. He fed the dog all the beef jerky left over from the journey. Then, after a hot bath and a change of clothes to get rid of the smell of death surrounding him, Coke took an early beef dinner at a nearby restaurant. After eating, he stopped by the Red Bull Saloon for a couple of shots of rye and a cold beer. Amid the din of the evening drinking crowd, Coke spotted Deputy U.S. Federal Marshal Quick Charlie Sims, as Sims hobbled forward, supporting himself on a walking cane, 1 foot heavily wrapped in a plaster cast. Sims seated himself at a poker table in the rear left corner. Coke, deciding this was as good a time as any to tell Sims what the dying outlaw had said about Los Pistoleros, made his way through the crowd and leaned down to Sims' side.
Excuse me, Marshal Sims. I need to talk to you for a second.
Why, certainly, Marshal...
Jake Coke. I'm still new here. We met a couple of weeks back outside of Parker's courthouse. You might not remember it.
Of course I remember it. Good to see you again, Marshal Croke. How's the job going?
I wanted to tell you about something that happened.
Sure thing, Marshal Croke. First chance we get, we'll sit down and get acquainted.
It's not Croke, Sims. It's Coke.
Oh, sorry.
Jake Coke stood there a second longer, watching Sims settle in for the game. Then, without another word, Coke went back to the bar, finished his drink, and left. Back in his room, Coke cleaned and inspected his rifle, thinking darkly about the way Sims had put him off. Finally, he dismissed the incident, pulled back the covers on his feather bed, lay down, and slept like a dead man until about 4:30 in the morning. Seeing Deputy Slater, Coke's first thought was of the five dead men he'd turned over to him.
Do you find something out, Slater?
Find something this soon? Lord, no. It'll be 2 or 3 days before we get the photo plates. Judge Parker wants to see you and Marshal Sims pronto in his office.
Oh, right now? What time is it?
It's early morning. I need you to do something for me. Judge Parker said for me to find Sims and tell him the same as I'm telling you. Problem is, if I find Sims at the Red Bull playing poker, I'll have to tell Judge if he asks me.
So?
The judge laid the law down to Sims just yesterday, either give up gambling or turn in his badge. I figure you go find Sims. I don't have to say where he was. Get it?
Yeah, I get it. Any idea what the judge wants?
No, but something's been eating at him for a while. I could tell the other day when he asked about you.
Slater looked at the sawed-off rifle in Coke's hand.
That's it, ain't it?
Yeah, this is it.
I've heard lots about it. I'd like to see you shoot it sometime, Coke.
I don't like shooting it unless I have to. Bullets cost money.
Oh, come on now. I heard you load your own ammunition.
Even if I did, powder and brass ain't free. I'll go get Sims and be there in a minute.
I'll tell the judge you're on your way. The both of you.
Yeah, you do that, Slater.
The poker game was still going on when Coke and Buster walked in through the batwing doors of the Red Bull Saloon and took a spot at the corner of the bar. Lantern light glowed in a circling dome above the tired faces of Quick Charlie Sims and the other four players seated around the table. Sims sat with his arms loosely cradled around a pile of poker chips and cash. Coke only shook his head with a tired smile, then turned away from the game as the bartender, Rudy Tuell, came up from a cot behind the bar, rubbing his red-rimmed eyes.
If that coffee's hot, I'll take a cup.
Jake nodded at the blue porcelain pot sitting along the wall behind the bar.
Well, it's still hot enough, but I'll warn you, it's strong enough to float an anvil. Just the way Roundhouse Eddie says him and his boys like it.
Well, if it's good enough for Roundhouse.
Rudy caught a glimpse of Buster as the dog slipped over close to Coke's boots and curled down to the floor.
Now, I told you a while back Mr. Ackerman don't like that dog being in here. Says he's dangerous.
He's dangerous, but only if you cross him.
Well, now, still in all, Mr. Ackerman is the owner here.
But Ackerman's not here right now, Rudy. My dog is. I need to talk to Sims.
Giving up on the dog, Rudy saw Coke's attention turn to the game.
Well, Sims is going to be hard to talk to right now, but you're welcome to try.
Damn it!
At the table, one of the four other players threw down a handful of cards in disgust, as Quick Charlie Sims spread out his cards and raked more chips and cash into the pile in front of him. Jake Coke remained at the bar, waiting to see what was about to happen.
That one there is Pete Lambertus. He's getting more surly every hand. A bunch showed up late last night and homed in on the game. I reckon you know the story on Lambertus.
Yeah, I know all about Pete Lambertus. He's a big gun out of South Texas. Killed a few gunmen, served a couple of years for robbery. I carried a wanted poster on him for a while. Sims doesn't mind whose money he takes, does he?
In a chair against the wall, 6 feet from the game, Sims' fiancée, Kate McCorkle, sat slumbering, her chin lowered to her bosom. On the floor at Kate's feet sat an empty wine bottle and a crushed-out cigar stub.
No. If you ask me, Roundhouse Eddie and the other one is no better than Lambertus. Roundhouse shot a man down once for stepping on his clean boots, the story goes.
Well, you have to admire a man's dedication to personal appearance, I reckon.
At the table, Quick Charlie Sims shuffled the cards and dealt them out in turn, taking his time, knowing that in the gray hours of morning, suspicion ran high amongst all nighttime losers. He'd been keeping an eye on Pete Lambertus, noting how the man became more and more irritated with each losing hand. Sims knew Lambertus should have called it a night hours ago. Lambertus had been making stupid mistakes, but it wasn't up to Sims to tell Pete Lambertus how to play poker. Sims was there for one thing and one thing only. He'd sat in with the intention of winning as much as he could, and so he had. With very little effort.
Chair open?
Sims spoke to Roundhouse Eddie Jenkins.
Buy me.
Sims turned his gaze to the next man on Roundhouse's left, a swarthy, heavyset man wearing a patch over one eye.
Up to you, Macon.
Buy me.
Big Joe Macon turned his good eye to his left, to Pete Lambertus, who sat directly across from Sims. Lambertus seemed to have difficulty deciding whether to open or pass. Next to Lambertus sat the old man Wiley Sugar. Wiley was the only other real gambler in the game. From the look on Wiley's thin, mustached face, Sims could see the old gambler had no interest in this hand and was ready to go on to the next. Like himself, Wiley Sugar had won some serious money throughout the passing night. Also like himself, Sims could tell the old man was wanting out.
It's up to you, Pete.
Not so fast, Sims. You've kept this game running at your pace all night. What the hell's your big hurry?
Sims cast a glance at Wiley Sugar. Just a glance, seeing the old man stifle a yawn with the back of his hand.
What's that about? Why are you looking at him?
Sims only stared at Lambertus, knowing there was no answer that could possibly suit him.
Yeah, you heard me, Sims. I've been seeing how you two look at one another all night. Think nobody's noticed that you two grifters are the only one pulling in any pots all night?
Roundhouse Eddie and Big Joe Macon turned their eyes upward to Pete Lambertus, then slowly to Sims.
He's got a point there, Quick Charlie. Just how long have you and this old buzzard known each other?
Gentlemen, these are questions you should have asked before we started if you had concerns. I think perhaps we've all played ourselves out. Let's fold it in. Take it up another time, what'd you say?
For a silent second, no one answered. Sim shrugged, raking his winnings closer in and picking up a stack of chips and sitting it to one side for the house.
Then if you will excuse me.
You ain't leaving, Sims. I ask a question, I always get an answer, one way or the other.
I'm unarmed, sir. I never carry a weapon to a poker game, for obvious reasons.
Roundhouse Eddie spread a crafty smile.
Well, now, I expect we could all clear this up by just taking back what we've lost. Couldn't we, Quick Charlie? Sort of settle up with no hard feelings. You being unarmed and all. Wouldn't that satisfy you, Pete?
His smile widening, Roundhouse Eddie reached a hand over to Quick Charlie's winnings.
It wouldn't satisfy me.
Kate leaned forward, her dress up over her knees and her legs spread wide. The eyes of Roundhouse, Macon, and Lambertus just instinctively at first went to the pale, smooth flesh of Kate's bare inner thighs.
Now get your fingers back from that money before I turn them into stubs.
You may want to take this opportunity to leave, Mr. Sugar. Perhaps we'll meet again somewhere.
Calmly, yet hastily, Wiley Sugar rose up, raking his winnings into his flat-crowned Southern planter's hat. No one seemed to notice Wiley Sugar leave the saloon, as the three men's eyes stayed fixed on Sims and McCorkle.
Now! Truly is time to call it a night. There are no further objections.
Sims stood up, lifted his hat from the empty chair next to him, raked his winnings into it, and cradled it under his arm.
I always figured you for a coward, Sims. What kind of man lets a woman take up his fight?
Fight? I didn't come here to fight, sir. I came to play poker. Something you should have considered before sitting down with me. Kate, let the nice gentleman leave now, if you would, please.
Roundhouse Eddie and Joe Macon stood up slowly, making an effort to keep their hands away from their pistols.
I ain't believing this.
Believe it, Pete. She really will empty those pistols into your belly. Y'all take my word for it.
Sims, only a low snake would allow a woman to do something like this.
But she does it so well, don't you think?
Why, you rotten guys!
Let it go, Pete. He's not lying. She'll burn a man in half once her bark's on. I've seen her do it.
Ain't no damn woman gonna stand me down.
Pete, damn it! She's got you jackpotted cold. We got business to take care of. There'll be another time for Quick Charlie. I'll see to it.
Pete Lambertus relented, grudgingly, biting his lip as he forced his hand upward and away from the Colt at his waist.
Leave the chips for my trouble.
Kate McCorkle saw Roundhouse Eddie look down at the remains of his steak on the table.
Quick Charlie would have won it all anyway.
Roundhouse bristled, but he kept quiet. Kate stepped forward and jerked her head toward the doors, long ringlets of her dark hair bouncing on her shoulders.
Now skin your ragged asses out of here, or I'll start spraying you down on principle.
Sims and Kate McCorkle walked over to the bar. Coke looked at Kate McCorkle, then at Rudy.
And Ackerman thinks my dog is dangerous.
I heard that. Marshall Coke, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still Coke.
And I see you're still here, Marshal Coke.
No, I left last night and came back. Deputy Slater woke me up, said the judge wants to...
Coke's words trailed as he saw Kate McCorkle turn from sight, lift her dress above her knees, and tuck the two pistols into hidden places he could only imagine. When she turned back, she saw Jake Coke blush and look away.
Kate, dear, meet one of our new marshals. This is Jack Coke. Marshal Coke, meet Kate McCorkle.
It's Jake. Howdy, ma'am.
Coke tipped his hat brim. Kate smiled, nodding demurely, smoothing down the bodice of her dress.
Young Marshal Coke used to be a bounty hunter, and quite good at it, I understand. Shot a lot of holes into some pretty bad hombres, eh, Marshal?
Coke just stared at him. Rudy sat a bottle of rye and a clean shot glass on the bar.
Thank you, Rudy. Here's to lovely women with six shooters. Now then, back on duty. Tell me, Marshal Coke, what brings you here at this time of morning?
Looking for you. The judge sent Deputy Slater over to my room a half hour ago, said find Sims and get over to the chambers as quick as I can.
And this was a half hour ago? Well, why didn't you say something sooner? We both know the judge can't be kept waiting.
I started to say something, but then the trouble popped up. Figured you wouldn't want me butting in.
Well, that was courteous of you.
Sims folded the paper money, separated the coins from the chips, and handed the chips to Rudy for the bartender to cash in.
Here, I'll help Rudy count it. You can meet me here later and let me know what's going on.
Good enough. Shall we get over there and see what the good judge has on his mind?
Lead the way, Sims.
On the way to the courthouse, Jake Coke shook his head.
Pete Lambertus? Roundhouse Eddie Jenkins? That's some low company, Sims, if you don't mind me saying so.
Yeah, I know. But I wasn't playing them. I was playing Wiley Sugar. They just happened to come in the midst of it.
So did you beat him? Sugar, that is?
Well, you don't beat someone like Wiley Sugar, Marshal Coke. You simply play him for the sheer challenge of it. Did I come out ahead? Yeah, of course I did. Did I beat him in any way? That was not even an issue. I take it you don't play much poker.
Oh, not that much. Not enough to get me fired.
Oh, I see you heard about that. Now, Parker didn't fire me, Coke. Simply gave me an ultimatum.
Yeah, I see how serious you took it.
Well, the truth is, I have given up gambling. Last night was an exception. Wiley Sugar showing up, I couldn't let the opportunity pass me by. Besides, poker isn't something a man can quit all at once. Could take me years.
What do you suppose Judge wants with us?
Oh, I have no idea. But I'd say it's not good news, him sending Deputy Slater looking for us before daylight.
Slater said the judge was asking about me while I was out in the territory. I've been working for Judge Charles Isaac Parker over 2 months now, and so far it's never been good news when he sends for me.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure working for Judge Parker is a lot different than it was when you were bounty hunting on your own.
Oh yeah, it's different, all right. I could actually afford to feed my dog and horse, bounty hunting on my own. I'm lucky they ain't at each other, me working for Parker. How do you other marshals manage?
Live modest, Marshal Coke. It'll catch up to you sooner or later.
I don't see how. 6 cents a mile, $2 an arrest, no pay at all if you bring a man in dead. I swear, if there's money to be made here, I can't see it.
You just got back into town yesterday evening, didn't you? You said something about wanting to talk to me last night?
Oh yeah, I wanted to talk to you, but you were too busy. I had to shoot an old boy named Delbert Strom out in the territory. Before he died, he told me something that's been on my mind ever since. Told me he was a member of Los Pistoleros. Said to tell you they ain't finished yet. What do you make of that?
Well, I wouldn't let it concern me if I were you, Coke. Men say lots of strange things before they die.
Yeah, I know it. I've seen my share of dying men.
Oh, of course you have. Now, didn't I hear that you were a school teacher somewhere, or made false teeth or something?
Jake Coke just stared at him. They walked on in silence through the first break of gray morning light. At the white picket fence around in the courthouse, Sim stopped with his hand on the gate.
I might as well warn you, Coke. The judge is hard to take this early in the morning. Could be a bit stiff on a new man.
So?
So? You might want to shine your badge up some and dust your hat before we meet with the judge. Now, Parker can get real prickly if he's in a bad mood. You have to learn to waltz around him a little. Well, I like to see a new man get off on the right foot.
Well, that's big of you, Sims. What about you? Have you learned to waltz your way around the judge?
Not me. Parker knows I'm not a dancing man.
Then do me a favor from now on.
What's that?
Stop talking down to me every time you open your mouth. I don't tolerate offhanded remarks. I'm new at this job, but I'm trying to make a living here. Don't take me for a fool, and don't be telling me how to handle the judge. You see, Sims, I don't dance either.
Outside the door of the judge's chambers, Deputy Daniel Slater stood with his shotgun at port arms, as if walking guard.
What the tarnation took you so long?
The black short-haired dog was close behind Coke, causing Slater to take a cautious step to one side.
We needed a few minutes to, get acquainted, Slater.
Sims reached a hand down to Buster's head, scratching the dog behind its ears. Coke looked flat out surprised that Buster's allowing a stranger's hand on him.
Sims, I might as well tell you now. Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth are in there with the judge. Don't go starting no trouble with them.
Oh? Well, I thought Hart and Roth were up in Ohio bringing back some prisoners.
Well, they was, but they're back. If you ask me, there's something big in the works. Judge Parker ain't been himself for the past 3 or 4 days.
Well, then let's see what it is, shall we?
Come in.
Buster the Catahoula dropped down on his belly outside the judge's chambers as if taking up a guard position. Jake Coke ran the cuff of his shirt across his badge and followed Sims inside.
Marshals, join us, please.
Judge Parker gestured towards Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth, who both stood to one side of the desk, their riding dusters still on and their battered Stetsons in their hands.
Everybody here knows one another, except for our new man, Marshal Coke.
Parker introduced Coke to him, Hart and Roth only nodding their acknowledgement, then turning back to the judge. Parker pointed to two chairs in front of his desk. Sims and Coke looked at each other, then moved to the chairs and sat down. They both looked at Hart and Roth, standing to the side. Sims eyed the two deputies curiously.
Marshal Coke, I hope Daniel Slater didn't waken you.
No, Your Honor, I was awake. Deputy Slater had said you would be sending for me.
Good. I admire a man who takes his work seriously. I trust you are already up as well, Marshal Sims?
You know me, Your Honor.
Yes, indeed. All right, man. I'll come straight to the point. Coke, you've only been with me a short while, but I'm certain you know all about the prisoner, J.T. Tuck Priest, whom I sentenced to hang 6 months ago.
Yes, I know about him, the one who killed Marshal Sullivan Hart's father. He was the leader of Los Pistoleros, him and a man back east named Mawbry.
That's correct. You know the whole story on Los Pistoleros, how large the gang was, how much trouble Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth had tracking Tuck Priest down, how, as it turned out, they never caught Priest at all, but rather it was Marshal Sims here who brought him in.
I heard some of it, Your Honor, but only heard bits and pieces of all that happened. Nobody's ever told me the whole of it. I know that Tuck Priest is going to hang for the murder in a couple of weeks. I reckon that's the most important thing.
The marshals here can fill you in on any particulars later. And Marshal Sims, I want to let you know, as I've let Marshal Hart and Roth know, that I've done everything within my power of office
I'd like to hear it now, Your Honor, firsthand from you. That is, if you would, please, Your Honor.
Hart and Roth seemed to stiffen, turning their attention to Jake Coke. Sims looked Coke up and down as if having just seen something worth attending to. Coke was not to be put off, Sims noted to himself, taking more interest now in the strange-looking young man. An explosion was apparent behind Parker's eyes, yet Parker seemed to pull it back, get it under control.
All right then, Marshal Coke. Perhaps it is important that I bring you up to date on this case first. Los Pistoleros was, and as it turns out, still is, the largest criminal organization ever uncovered by any law enforcement in this nation. At one time, the gang had tentacles that reached as far as Washington. Had it not been for Tuck Priest killing Sullivan Hart's father, Marshal Coleman Hart, we would have never heard of Los Pistoleros. But as events unfolded, we learned more and more about the gang. Deputies Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth had a shootout with members of Los Pistoleros on the streets of Chicago, if you can imagine such a thing.
I heard about it.
Yes, I'm sure you have. Although I'm sure you had no idea that it was Quick Charlie Sims here who instigated the whole public spectacle.
Sims smiled, lifting his chin a bit.
No, I didn't, Your Honor. But from what I've heard about Marshal Sims, it doesn't surprise me. No offense, Sims. But I heard you were a wanted man at the time, and that you escaped custody and put Hart and Roth on Priest's trail because Priest had framed you for a bank robbery.
Yes, that's correct. For all the efforts of my deputies, I have to admit it was Sims who brought this case to a head. He led my deputies to Tuck Priest. He turned Priest over to them. Then, when Tuck Priest escaped from my jail, it was Sims who caught up to him and brought him back. So no matter what else you heard about Quick Charlie Sims, take it from me, he knows how to get a job done. That's why I pinned a badge on him.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Now then, Coke, that is pretty much the whole of it. Any questions? If not, I'll continue with why I've called everybody here.
I'm new, Your Honor. I felt I ought to hear it firsthand.
And so you have.
Parker picked up a document and pitched it across the top of his desk. Sims leaned forward and took it after seeing Jake Coke make no attempt to reach for it.
Read it and weep, Marshals. It's a sad commentary on what our system of law has fallen to in this country.
Yes, Your Honor.
Sims' eyes darted down the document. Finishing with it, Sims slumped in his chair. Coke saw the expression on Sims' face harden.
Can they do this?
Sims passed it to Jake Coke.
They've done it.